When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The Giants and the Lions are done with 2 days of joint practices, and the preseason opener for both teams is tomorrow night at MetLife Stadium. It's time to talk about it next on the Big Blue Breakdown. Hi again, everybody. I'm Paul Dottino. So glad you could join us for tonight's live program here on the Big Blue Breakdown. The New York Football Giants take on the Detroit Lions at MetLife Stadium tomorrow night for a 7 p.m. kickoff. That, of course, is Eastern Time. Now, this week, the Lions, with a reciprocal agreement with the Giants. Remember last year, the Giants went out to Michigan, and they practiced for a couple of days with Detroit. Well, this time, Dan Campbell and company came to the Meadowlands and had two practice sessions with the Giants on Monday and on Tuesday. Today's a day off. Tomorrow, these teams are going to go at it. Now, we will talk during the course of this program about what you might expect to see during the course of that game. I do want to hear from you folks, though, because I'd like to know what you want to see in this preseason opener between these two teams. Maybe not only what you want to see, but what you expect to see. And maybe even just some questions you have about this team in general. I don't know how many of you came to training camp over the course of the last couple of weeks, but you know, the Giants had a lot of public practices where folks were in the stands and had a chance to see a lot of things. Some stuff maybe you understood, some stuff maybe you didn't, and you have some thoughts or questions about. We'd certainly love to take your comments and questions about those and see if we can clear some stuff up for you. Now, here's what I can tell you about the game tomorrow night. We know that head coach Brian Daboll has told the media, and by the way, he did not meet with the media today. They never do, coaches, the day before a game. They had a walkthrough today, the Giants did, in the morning in the field house because it rained in East Rutherford. And then after they were done, the Detroit Lions had a walkthrough in the field house as well. So no media availabilities today, which is why you haven't seen any media reports about who these teams are going to play in their preseason opener. Now, Brian Daboll, the Giants head coach, basically told us yesterday that he was going to talk things over with his coaching staff on Wednesday night. Well, as we are talking to you right now, it is Wednesday night. So Daboll is not taking calls from me, nor is he taking calls from any other media people, as he discusses things with his staff and decides what is going to happen with tomorrow's snaps. So, I don't know. We could discuss this too. Who do you want to see play? How many snaps would you like to see play? I mean, this is all great stuff for conversation this evening. We're going to be here for at least an hour, so don't be bashful. I see the comments are already starting to rock and roll, and I'm so glad to see all of you folks getting in on the program tonight because we're going to have a lot of fun. This is the time to have fun. Everybody's 0-0. We're all anticipating the first time that Big Blue can suit it up and get on the field. So this is a really, really fun time, an exciting time. You can just let your imagination go wild as to what you want to see and what you expect to see. So let me just go right here and just say, I love this, before we get to anything else, and I was just about to talk about the two coaches, but I can't resist this. Big Blue says, evening, Paul. Nice on the audio. I could not resist getting that comment up right away, because anybody who happened to be on last Wednesday's program knows that the audio was butchered for the first half hour of the show. We wound up doing 90 minutes because I didn't want to cheat you guys out of an hour of information. So we did a 90-minute program. I'm not sure we're going to go 90 tonight. We'll see how it goes. Depends on you people. If you're really excited and you got a lot to say, we'll go for it. If not, that's okay too. But Big Blue, hey, we got the audio fixed. Yabba dabba doo, Fred Flintstone got something right for a change. So glad to have that. All right, so see a whole bunch of people chiming in here saying hello, and you guys already chatting up with each other, and that's really cool because we want to get a community going here. All right, back to the coaches for a minute, and then I want to get to some of your questions and your comments. So Brian Daboll said he'll get together tonight with his coaching staff and decide how many snaps he's going to give each of his guys. All right, you can assume for sure that anybody who's been nicked up, guys like JMS, John Michael Schmitz, Evan Neal, who hasn't done a whole lot right now, he's been working with the trainers, did some running on the side the other day. He's been out watching practice, but not in gear. John Michael Schmitz has been in full gear, and he's been out on the sideline watching practice. And while Daboll won't put a timetable on Neal and says he's progressing, he has put a little bit of a clock on John Michael Schmitz by saying he's getting close. So let's just say maybe, perhaps, next week, as they prepare to play Houston in preseason game number 2, based on the evidence that we see and coach saying he's getting close, that's probably not a stretch. Although, I wouldn't be shocked if, again, it takes a little longer. We'll see. The bottom line is, this kid's in his second NFL season. He battled some shoulder issues last year, and it just makes no sense for them to bring him back until he's 100% ready. I mean, that would just be foolish. Why rush him back and get him a few extra practices at the expense of maybe, you know, dinging him up a little bit more? And then once the regular season starts, you got to worry about managing him. That's pointless. So I understand that he does need the work, but I also understand that the Giants want to make sure that once he gets in the lineup, hopefully opening day against Minnesota, he doesn't have to come out at all. And he can practice in full throughout the course of the regular season. So that's the deal with him. One of the other guys who's nicked up, by the way, is Lawrence Cager, who was battling to become the number 2 tight end on this team. He's been nursing a hamstring now for several days. So, you know, these are the kinds of guys that you won't see tomorrow for sure. They're going to be definite scratches. So now your question's probably going to be, and I'll anticipate this, how many starters will you see in the game? To be honest with you, folks, if it were me, and it's not me, I'm not a head coach, I don't get to make that call. I would actually like to see the starters play, I don't know, at least 10 snaps, a series or two, you know, to start the game. But we know how coaches are these days. So many injuries. And every time you get an injury, it becomes hell for your team, specifically because of the salary cap. If it's a guy who's making a lot of money and then he gets dinged up and all of a sudden now he's on the side, and if that injury lingers up to the beginning of the regular season, it really becomes a major headache. So I understand why coaches are very conservative. Lord knows Brian Daboll has been very conservative with his preseason snaps over his first 2 seasons with the Giants. So I'm going to say he probably is going to scratch an awful lot of his starters against the Lions. That would be my guess and my supposition. Daniel Jones is an interesting topic, and that is because coming off of the ACL, and we know it's less than 9 months now since he was injured, you know, I'm of the belief, and I know they've given him 11 on 11s nonstop because they want to give him as close to replicating game action as possible. So they want him taking 11 on 11s in practice. I understand that that's supposed to kind of get him back into it. to be frank with you, I wouldn't mind if he played a series or two either. But I just don't know what the Giants think about that. Dable's not playing his cards in front of anybody. And so it would not surprise me if he doesn't play at all. It would not surprise me if he plays a series or two just to get some live reps and maybe hands it off a few times, maybe throws a screen or a flat pass or a little dump off, because there's no way in the world they're going to want him to drop back with a five-step drop and hold the ball for 5 seconds. That's not going to happen. If he gets into the game, he's not going to run it. He's going to be told either hand it off or quick release. Get the ball out of your hands and don't get hit. I think that makes a lot of sense, but I wouldn't mind seeing him take some live snaps. I think that would be a pretty good idea. But again, I won't be surprised if they don't play. All right. So that's where we stand from the Giants' perspective. Where do we stand from the Detroit Lions' perspective? Well, let's see. Dan Campbell, their head coach and a former Giants tight end, as you guys all know, he's already told us that starting quarterback Jared Goff will not play in the game. Okay? That's it. Goff's not playing. I don't think Kevin Zeitler, one of their starting offensive linemen, former Giants guard, I don't think he's going to play either because he got a little bit nicked up the other day. They may have a couple other guys too, but Campbell's statement to us was that for most of his key starters, if they play at all, they would only get a few snaps. So that's where it stands in terms of playing time. So I guess I've kind of already taken some of your questions off the map, but I hope you have some other ones, as I will now go down the comment sheet before I get to my next topic that I'd like to talk about. And that, of course, is going to be some of the battles that are going to be hotly contested over the next several weeks. And these preseason games, man, oh man, oh man, they are going to count an awful lot as these guys try to keep score between the second and the third stringers down the line on the depth chart. All right, here we go. We got Tom Thai. We got John Morano. We got Winston Graves. Oh, man, we got a whole bunch of people on here. We got Mark Bennett. Oh, Mark. Mark actually has a question. Mark says, I'd like to see Turbo Miller play a lot. Dante Miller has flashed a lot. In fact, every practice, his speed is obvious. Look, we know he's from Columbia, then went to South Carolina, got caught in red tape, wasn't eligible, wound up getting all jammed up in the NCAA's gobbledygook, okay? Then went to the pro day realizing that he had to declare himself for an NFL opportunity, given that the NCAA was not going to give him an extra redshirt year like he thought he was going to get. And he ran a 4.28 in the 40. So that's where the Giants found out about him. Or maybe they knew about him but didn't tell anybody. But they were well aware of the 4.28 and they signed him. All right, that's the quick background on Dante Miller. Known as Little Turbo. Well, I got to tell you something, folks. He is a turbo. He is like a little tornado all by himself. He explodes with tremendous quickness. He darts around like a mosquito. And when he gets that straight on speed going, he can fly. Wow. He's something to watch. Now, they've run him out of regular offensive sets. They've run him catching passes. He's done fine with that. On running plays, when he gets through the line and gets to the second level, he just turns on the jets, and he's like a puff of smoke. You guys remember the Roadrunner cartoon with Wile E. Coyote? Beep, beep, and a puff of smoke. That's Dante Miller. So the question becomes, do the Giants keep four running backs? Because we know that Devin Singletary is going to be here. He's the lead guy in the backfield by committee. You got to think that Eric Gray's going to be here because he was just picked last season, didn't get a lot of chances to play outside of the return game, which he didn't do well in. But I don't think they'd give up on a, you know, middle round draft pick so quickly. And also, quite frankly, in the last few days, he's been coming on and looking better at practice. You got Taylor, the running back from Purdue, was drafted in the fifth round. Now, here's the thing. Tyrone Tracy. I'm sorry. Why did I say Taylor? I keep thinking about Tyrod Taylor all the time. He's with the Jets, for goodness sakes. The quarterback is with the Jets. Tracy Jr., the former Purdue wide receiver turned running back. We've told you ever since we started doing this show, he is really exciting to watch. Terrific jukes, terrific quicks, has speed, has good hands, runs the ball very well with gusto, and cuts it upfield. One cut and he's upfield. Like him a lot. I think since camp started a few weeks ago, he's been the second most productive running back behind Singletary. In fact, we've talked about it on the Big Blue Kickoff live show that it wouldn't surprise us if he is number two on the depth chart ahead of Gray. But the problem is now, again, do you keep three or do you keep four running backs? Mark, I just don't know. I think that's going to depend a lot on what happens to the other positions. How many receivers are you going to keep? How many quarterbacks are you going to keep? How many offensive linemen do you have to keep? These are tough. How many tight ends? You know what's so rotten about this? You've got to cut some good players. The Giants are now getting better to the point where cutting down to 53 is going to be a problem now. It's going to be hard. It wasn't so hard in a bunch of other years over the last decade. It's going to be hard this year because they've got some linebackers. They've got some defensive linemen. They've got some wide receivers. Guys that you're going to want to have, and you're not going to be able to fit them on the 53 because you've got to rob from one position in order maybe to keep an extra guy at another for safety or insurance purposes, maybe because somebody's nicked up. This is going to be a major headache. Folks, I was telling people on Big Blue Kickoff earlier today, I was up at 3:30 this morning, literally, and I'm not joking. I was corresponding with a friend of mine out in California at 3:30 in the morning discussing the Giants wide receiver room, which is one of the real, real, real jigsaw puzzles that they're going to have to get through. But more on that later. Mark asked me about Turbo Miller. Mark, that's my answer. Turbo Miller, I think, is a very exciting prospect. He can do kickoff returns, and obviously he can also play from scrimmage. I'd like to see him in the building come September. I just don't know if he can be on the 53. So the question becomes, can he clear waivers and get to the practice squad? That may depend on how well he does in the preseason. If he shines in the preseason, somebody may try to scap him up. So that could be a very sticky situation for the Giants because Miller is a very intriguing prospect. At least he is to me. Hey, thanks for the question, Mark. Let's see here. Matt Sullivan, why do teams always seem to get into tussles when they have these mixed practices? Matt, it was about 95-something degrees for most of the first couple of weeks of training camp with heat indexes. And I know this, for one of the early days, the heat index got up to 108 degrees on the field. Now, have you ever been on a football field, sweating bullets, in full gear, trying to compete with some physicality in 108 degrees real field temperature outside in the boiling hot sun with some nasty New Jersey humidity? chances are, if you have, and maybe you have, I don't want to doubt that you have, you probably got a little bit irritated. And it doesn't take much irritation, okay, to start a little bit of abrasiveness. Now, the Giants earlier in camp had a little bit of abrasiveness a couple of times within their own house before the Lions got here. You usually get that every summer during training camp anyway. But there's no question, during the 2 days of practices with the Detroit Lions, yeah, there was some abrasiveness. It was heavier on Monday than it was yesterday. But you get that competitive thing going where, you know what? We've been fighting it out against our own team, trying to make plays, trying to prove ourselves. Now we got another team in here, and maybe there's some yapping going on. Maybe there's some chatter and talking, and, you know, it's getting under people's skin, and maybe they're doing a little too much of that. Or maybe somebody decided that, you know what? This is supposed to be the kind of thing where, boom, we thud, we contact, we hear a whistle, and that guy seemed to go a little bit too much or a little bit too long. And I'm taking exception to it. Coaches don't want these scrums because ultimately, if it results in a player getting hurt, it's just a terrible, terrible thing. So coaches really say, we want you to compete. We want you to show some energy and life and spark. We'd like you to show some physicality, but they kind of want you to take it to a line and then make sure you don't go over the line. Well, the Giants and the Lions kind of pushed that line a little bit further over the last 2 days because of some of the abrasiveness between the two teams. It's easy to lose patience. And again, I can't tell you how much trash talk there was or there was not. I'm on the sidelines. I'm not actually in the huddles or on the line of scrimmage. So I can't tell you, but I suspect there was probably some trash talk going on. And some guys, you know, they have thinner skin than others, especially when they're tired and they're hot and they're cranky and they're just agitated. So that's my answer to you, Matt. I wish that all of these practice scrums that occur would be as light or as small as they were between the Giants and Lions to where nobody got hurt. You get a resulting injury from one of those things and it just ruins everybody's day. Not to mention the coach and the GM and it's just horrible. The fact that nobody got hurt in any of these little scrapes is the best news of all. Now, tomorrow, they're playing the game. Every coach will say, it's one thing if you do a little something extracurricular at practice. We don't like it, but you better not do it in a game. Because if you do something like that in a game, there's going to be a penalty flag. And you will actually hurt your team on the field, aside from any injury that might occur. And let's not forget, the NFL reportedly has fined both the Giants and the Lions for some of their abrasiveness over the course of the last 2 days. The league also wants to make sure that guys don't get hurt either, because it doesn't help the NFL if guys are sitting out injured. All right, Matt, appreciate the question. Great stuff. All right, let's see here. Let me go here to Tim. Timothy Frith says, will the Giants defense be one of the best in the NFL this season? Timothy, I agree with you. I think they're a top 10 defense. I don't know. Is top 10 defense in your frame of reference one of the best? I mean, that puts you in the top third, right? You got 32 teams. If I tell you they're top 10, you know, that puts them in the top third. I kind of think that's pretty good. I think if they develop quickly within that young secondary, I love the front seven, love the defensive line, love the linebackers. If the secondary matures and develops quickly and plays to their potential and plays to the talent and skill level that they have shown, this Giants defense could potentially be a top five defense in my mind. Top 10 for sure. Top five, possibly. That's a little high, but why not reach for the stars, right? They certainly have impact players. Thibodeau, Dexter Lawrence, Burns, Okereke. Those four guys are impact players on defense. I happen to think that Isaiah Simmons can be an impact player too, now that they finally got him squared away and how they want to use him in the system. And you know what? Maybe Tay Banks in his second year, after some ups and downs as a rookie, which all rookies or most rookies have, Tay Banks may graduate to the top upper echelon, two of the corners. He certainly has the talent and the skills. No one's going to tell me that he doesn't. What he's missing is the experience. So maybe in year two, Tay Banks raises his level and becomes a real headache at corner too. So the Giants have a bunch of guys who are above the waterline, big problem causers, if you will. So why shouldn't they be a top 10 defense? I mean, I don't think that is unrealistic at all. Top five could be reaching some. I understand that. I'm giving them a high bar. I'm telling them, go for the stars, baby. Reach for it. You want to be a top five? Go for it. Why can't you be? You definitely should be a top 10, though, without any question at all. Timothy, thanks so much for the question. I appreciate it. Big Blue, I see you got another question, but because I've got some other people here I want to get to, I might be able to get back to you in a minute. All right, John Jay. Wouldn't risk any of the starters tomorrow, especially with the weather. John, I understand. Look, I'm going to be on the sideline, all right, as part of the radio crew. The game will be, by the way, on WFAN in New York, 101.9 FM. We'll be on the FM dial. The Yankees will be on WFAN AM tomorrow night. And I'll be on the sideline all night and providing reports from there and maybe a couple of interviews. And I will be a walking sponge. I mean, that's just what it's going to be. I fully expect to get drenched. Will that impact Brian Daboll's decision? I think most of his decision is going to be based on how he feels about his individual players and what he wants to see and what he doesn't want to see and what his trainers tell him is first and foremost. But will the rain impact his decision? I don't know how much of a percentage it will weigh on his mind. I really don't. Again, he was playing everything close to the vest when he talked to the media. And nobody at the time when he spoke to the media yesterday had asked him, would the rain play a factor? And maybe that's because we were all too concerned about the dual practice sessions that we didn't look at the weather forecast, and we should have, and realize that it's going to pour on Thursday. And that question probably should have come up. So bad on all the media, including myself, for not asking that question. So it's a good one by you, John, and I appreciate that. And we're just going to have to see. Thank you so much for chiming in. All right, what else do we have here? We have Watson Graves, who says, Evan Neal, left guard. Oh, Watson. I wish I could be Sherlock Holmes for you and solve this mystery. But right now, Evan Neal is doing some jogging on the side and working with the trainers as he rehabs from off-season ankle surgery. Until he gets in pads and gets on the field and is able to practice and work on some of the things that offensive line coach Carmen Brasillo in his first season now, remember, Brasillo just came over from the Raiders, until Brasillo gets to work with this piece of clay and mold him on the football field, it's unrealistic to even think about where Evan Neal is going to land. Both GM Joe Shane and head coach Brian Daboll have said the plan is still for him to be a right tackle. But they will not commit, A, as to when he's going to get on the field. They just simply don't know medically. And then B, if he could get Wally Pipped. Now, for those historians out there, you know who Wally Pipp was. The former first baseman for the Yankees way back when, who missed a game. Lou Gehrig came in and played first base and then played over 2,000 consecutive games, and Wally Pipp never got back into the starting lineup. Could Evan Neal get Wally Pipped by Jermaine Illuminor? I say the answer is it is possible. If Illuminor holds down that position effectively and Neal takes an extended period of time to make it back, I don't think the Giants will mix up that offensive line. I don't think they're going to make a change. Again, this is now with an if-then scenario. If Illuminor plays a good right tackle and the line is holding up well, if, I think Evan Neal could get Wally Pipped. And that's just a matter of circumstances. It's very difficult for any head coach to make a change and pull somebody out of the lineup when he's going well, especially if it's along the offensive line. So your question, Watson, about left guard, it's premature and there's really no answer to it. I've been of the opinion that Evan Neal plays too high to be a guard, and I don't think it will work out for him at guard. I think he's still best suited as a tackle, which is what the Giants feel. But, with a capital B, that's bigger than Evan Neal's butt, okay? All bets are off. A, get him on the field, and then B, see where he can fit in at that time. And if it means that he's on the bench, then he's on the bench. If it means they think he can function as a starter at any of the positions and there's a need for it, well then, that's probably what's going to happen. But as of now, the left guard thing, I think today is off the table. It's too premature. All right. Let's see here. Oh, A-Train. Saw you last Thursday at training camp, Paul. See you running some sprints on the defensive sideline. Couldn't get your attention to shake your hand. Love your content on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Well, A-Train, appreciate it. Let me think. When was that? All right, on Thursday. Try to think. What was I doing on Thursday? I did have a day when I was running out of time. And I had to sprint down to the Legends autograph table all the way down at the far end of the field outside the stands because I had to connect with one of the alums to arrange for a television interview because we had a camera that was prepared to do a spot that I was going to have to do for one of the Giants television shows on MSG in addition to doing a audio podcast for the Giants Huddle. As you know, one of the other programs on Giants.com. So I was in a time crunch, and yes, I sprint? I don't know. Was it a sprint? I gave it a pretty good go, but I don't know. I don't know if it would be enough to qualify me for the Olympic finals, but I certainly gave it what I could to try to get down there in a hurry and try to make the appropriate arrangements so that we could be squared and then I could get back in time to do the interview and then also be able to see practice with my trusty pen pad and pen so that I could write all the notes down that I need to write because, you know, you got to watch with a very attentive eye. So anyway, A-Train, appreciate you for coming on the program today. Thanks for the wonderful comments, and hope to see you again at some point during the season. So again, enjoy, and again, appreciate you coming out. All right, let's see what else here. Oh, he did have a second comment, which I guess didn't fit into the first one. Rooting hard for this offensive team this year. Love our receivers. My goodness. Folks, these receivers, the quartet, the top four quartet, and I mentioned this on Big Blue Kickoff Live, this top four quartet, okay, is the best the Giants have had since 2011. Cruz, Nix, Manningham, Dominic Hixon. Hixon tore his ACL against the Rams in week two and missed most of that season. But that quartet, they haven't seen any quartet even close to those four until this year. Between Slayton, Hyatt, Wandell Robinson, and Malik Nabers. The best quartet of Giants receivers since 2011 when they went to the Super Bowl. They've had some good threesomes, but quartet, absolutely not. Could not match this one. All right, folks, we're taking a very, very quick couple of seconds time out, and we'll be back to talk more about the Giants and their preseason game against the Lions. Give me 1 second, and we'll be right back with you.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I told you it was only going to be a second. In fact, what does Chris Cuomo say on the One Nation show? He actually says it'll be 40 seconds or a minute and 40 seconds, and then he comes back. All right, so I lied. It was a little bit more than 1 second. But we're back on Big Blue Breakdown here on the New York Giants on SI Media Network. All right, let me get back to the comments here because there's a lot of people who are trying to get in tonight, and I am so appreciative because I love talking Giants football. In fact, if I could, I'd run a station 24/7 and actually have a giant station, all Giants, all the time. But only one person can do so much. All right, here we go. John Jay. Paul, who do you think is an under-the-radar guy on either offense or defense we should look out for during the preseason? Well, is Turbo Miller an under-the-radar guy? Everybody kind of knows him because he's played at Columbia University, and his story was so unique that I think he got some press and some ink. So does he count as an under-the-radar guy? He's deep on the depth chart. He comes in the spring as the fourth running back on the depth chart. You know? I mean, to be honest, he probably came in as number five in the spring behind Jayshon Corbin, who has since been waived injured. And I think Miller is trying to make a challenge to be number three on the depth chart, potentially. He and Gray are going to be in a battle, I think, for that number three position all the way through training camp. So, I don't know, John. Do you want to count Miller as an under-the-radar guy? I'll give you a couple other potential under-the-radar guys. Again, depending upon how you want to define it, do you consider Manhertz an under-the-radar guy? I mean, we all talk about Bellinger. He's the starting tight end. Cager was making a pitch to be the number two. He's been around for a couple of years. They drafted Theo Johnson out of Penn State, so we all know him. Manhertz is kind of an under-the-radar guy, but he's the best pure blocking tight end on the roster. I mean, he's got a few years of NFL experience. Look, when he got here, he was that one little line in the transactions, right? the little transactions in the back of your newspaper. I know most of you don't read newspapers anymore, but that one tiny little line in transactions that's as small as the Wall Street Journal stock type that said giant sign Manhurts, tight end. I suppose he's under the radar. And I think he's got a legitimate chance to make the team because he's by far the biggest frame and boxy type tight end that they have. And for blocking purposes, I think there's value there. So I think he's a possible under the radar guy on offense. And then I happen to be a big fan of Bryce Ford Wheaton, who got a lot of ink as an undrafted rookie free agent last year, ripped up his ACL, rehabbed like a demon in the offseason. He's had a pretty good camp, but the wide receiver position is so stocked. And to be frank with you, while I like him a lot, he's got really good speed. He's got length. He seems to have gotten over some of the dropsies issues he had at West Virginia. The thing about him is that coming off the ACL and being an undrafted free agent, a rookie last year, you probably can sneak him back onto the practice squad this year. So I don't know what his odds are of making the 53, because I think he might be a guy you can sneak through. And I think they'd like to keep him in the building. I know I would, but you could probably sneak him through. So those would be the candidates, depending upon how you want to quantify an under-the-radar guy on offense. On defense, under-the-radar guy on defense. For me, I think there's Deontay Johnson, the linebacker, but he's getting some ink too now. Undrafted rookie free agent last year out of Toledo, comes to the team, has a really good camp, but then, you know, that was it. Stuck around, back to camp this year, playing really well, making some plays, doing some good things. Coach even mentioned him. Shane Bowen, the defensive coordinator, mentioned him the other day. Says now he's going to have to do some things on special teams for us. But he's looked good. He's got a chance right now to make the 53. So does Beavers, to be honest. I'm a big Beavers guy. I always was when he came out of Cincinnati. Blew out his knee. Came back last year. The knee wasn't right. Spent the year on a practice squad, got activated at the end of the season for a token activation because they were grateful to him for how hard that he worked. They wanted to reward him. And now here's Darian Beavers, you know, making plays and doing some really nice things at training camp. And I still am a big believer in Beavers. I thought he was a steal on the third day 2 years ago. And I still think so. Now, it took him a full year to rehab that knee, and now it looks like he's getting back to maybe what he's supposed to be. Johnson and Beavers, both of those guys, to me, would be dark horse candidates. I don't know that you can keep them both. Again, you might be able to sneak one of those two guys onto the practice squad, or maybe even both of those guys. Another under-the-radar guy, I guess you could qualify Ryder Anderson, because remember, he came in as an undrafted rookie free agent, got hurt, was basically forgotten last year. I said the entire offseason, I thought he could contend as a three-technique defensive tackle. I believe that. He gained 25 pounds last year with the intentions of being, we got up to 290 with the intention of potentially doing that. And then it never worked out for him. Again, he was coming off a significant injury. This training camp, he's been the best pure pass rusher of the three technique defensive tackles. And I think some people are finally starting to catch on that, you know, what I said back in the offseason, early in the offseason, wasn't so crazy. Ryder Anderson actually has a chance. He really does. I think he's on the 53. So, depending upon if you wanted to believe me or not, he would be an under-the-radar guy. He certainly was not under the radar for me. John, hope that answers your question. we're going to move on to another one. Let's see here. D'Angelo says, neighbors one side, Slayton the other, and Wandale and Hyatt in the backfield has got to be a play. Okay. I do have a lot of fun drawing up schematics. All right. I have a lot of fun sitting down, putting on an offensive coordinator's hat, a defensive coordinator's hat, and I diagram a whole bunch of things. This is one of the things that I stay up late at night doing. And I say, okay, what do you think about this or this or this or that? And I just do it because I like to be creative. I like to utilize the stuff that I'm seeing and that I'm learning from these coaches and see if I can expand on that by coming up with a lot of my own ideas. I keep them to myself or I share them with the fans as something that could be intriguing or interesting, but I don't ever give them to the coaching staff. I would never do that. It's an insult to them. They've spent their lives becoming head coaches, and that's how they put food on the table. That's their job. I'm not foolish enough, naive enough, or disrespectful enough to ever suggest a play to a coach. So in regarding this particular play, personally, I wouldn't like it. I think I'm much better off using those guys in a four wide set than having two of them in the backfield. I'd like to get all four of them up on the line of scrimmage and basically tell the defensive coordinator, I've got four guys who can be really dangerous. They're great route runners. They've got jukes. They've got speed. And they can get yak yardage with the ball. So I'm putting them right up on the line of scrimmage where they can get out quickly into their pass patterns as fast as possible. And I'm going to get them the ball and I'm going to cause trouble for you. Because good luck trying to cover those four guys. That's what I would probably do. I would not want to waste two of those guys in my backfield behind or next to my quarterback where they've got how many yards now? Just to get back to the line of scrimmage? Why would I do that? That doesn't make sense to me. I know Wandale Robinson, you know, has done a number of running plays. Hyatt and Neighbors and Robinson could all do jet sweeps or end arounds. That's possible, okay? But even those, they're not lining up 5 yards in the backfield, okay, to do that. So, you know, if you're asking me, could one or two of those guys start taking some running plays to get them the ball, I'm all for it. I'll give you that. I think the Giants will do that. We've seen a lot of that in training camp. But lining them up in the backfield, it just, no, you're giving the defense too much space to react. And you're costing those offensive players too much room, you know, where they're so far behind the line of scrimmage already, you're putting them at a handicap. So I would say no to that one, D'Angelo, but I appreciate the thought, and I love the creativity. Okay? Again, I do the same thing myself, so that's really cool. All right. Mark Bennett says, no chance he makes it over Gray. He's talking, obviously, about Turbo Miller. I know. Gray was a mid-round draft choice. I don't see how, you know, that they would put him down. So for me, if Miller makes the team, and again, I'm strictly talking off of eyewitness performance of training camp. Miller, to me, has been the third most productive running back for the entirety of training camp to this point. There's still 3 preseason games to go, and then another week after that. So there's plenty of time for Gray to reassert himself as the 2 or the 3, okay? Right now, today, my eyes tell me that Miller's performed better than Gray, but Gray has been picking it up the last couple of practices. And you're right, mid-round draft choice. I don't see him going anywhere. This comes down to probably more of a question, do you keep 4 or do you keep 3? And is Miller going to earn or win a job on the kickoff team? That's another way that Miller can sneak onto that 53. Because you're right. I think Gray's going to be on the team unless he absolutely falls apart over the next several weeks. So I appreciate the thought. Maybe I didn't fully explain myself in the big picture scope. But I'm with you. I understand that. And again, what we see eyewitness-wise, what we're seeing in practice doesn't necessarily hold by the time we get to opening day and the Giants play the Minnesota Vikings. Simply, it's an observation based on the first few weeks of practice. Miller has done some very, very nice things. All right. Timothy Frith, didn't you know that today is Tommy DeVito's 26th birthday? Timothy, I'll be frank with you. I keep track of what I see at practice, and I don't really keep track of celebratory dates on the calendar. If it is Tommy DeVito's 26th birthday, happy birthday, Tommy. Hope you had a great cake. Hope you enjoyed those meatballs and spaghetti. I can say that because I'm a Paisan. And believe me, spaghetti and meatballs, maybe a chicken parm. You know, I'm a meat ravioli guy. A lot of people are cheese ravioli. I'm a meat ravioli guy. You know, whatever dish you had there, Tommy, I hope that that your mom cooked up a special one for you and you had a great birthday. And I like Tommy DeVito. I think Tommy DeVito belongs in the National Football League. Okay? I'm just going to get this out of the way right now. Tommy DeVito belongs in the National Football League. He should have a roster spot this year. Will the Giants keep three quarterbacks on the 53? I don't know the answer to that. If they do, he stays, obviously. If they don't, he's got to clear waivers to get to the practice squad. I'm of the opinion he gets claimed and somebody will scap him up. Because I think Tommy DeVito proved enough, at least to my eyes. Look, the game against Green Bay last year, when he brought him downfield and they got the last second field goal to knock off the Packers. There are guys who have had token opportunities in the National Football League over the years who have never, ever been in a game-winning, last-minute drive situation and executed. I had a scout say to me, you pray for those things. You basically beg the football gods when you have a, quote, fringe or unknown quarterback. You want to see, does he get the opportunity to pull a game out? And if he does, can he do it? And if he does do it, that tells you he's got enough. He needs to have another look. Well, I'm not big on one-loss records for quarterbacks. You guys probably know that if you've listened to any of my stuff over the years. I don't really go for that. But here's what I can say. The Giants went 3-3 while DeVito was the starting quarterback. So obviously he was not an impediment to them winning games. They were able to win while DeVito was under center. And they did it more than once. They did it three times. So even if you wanted to be on the negative side of things, how bad could he have been when a team that won six games all year still won three games while he was playing? That's what I would say to any critic who thinks Tommy DeVito does not belong in this league. I think that he does. And that comeback win against Green Bay, that last second drive that he engineered, that speaks volumes to a lot of scouts in the NFL, which is why I think he's going to get claimed. All right. Let's see here. Well, Matt Sullivan has another question. Oh, 45 Super Bowl rings, says hello. Let's see, that's a new guy, so let me get his question in. Is it true the Giants are using Malik Nabers as a punt returner? Please tell him to stop. Oh, four Super Bowl rings. Let me put it to you this way. There's been a number of guys over the course of the spring and the summer that the Giants have had back there fielding kicks. When push comes to shove, I do not believe that Malik Nabers is going to be on kick return. That doesn't mean during practice They can't have him out there fielding a few kicks if he wants to do it. They have a lot of guys back there fielding kicks. Slayton, Wandell Robinson, Sailors, McKenzie, Miller. I mean, there's a lot of guys back there just fielding kicks. I don't think you're going to see Neighbors on punt return. I would not worry about that four Super Bowl rings. I really would not. All right. Henry says, thank you. Okay, that's cool. I don't know what it was for, Henry. Maybe I answered one of your questions. Jordan Sarnoff says, P. Dot the best. All right, that's cool. I like that. Nothing wrong with that comment. I concur. How about that? Let's see here. I'm looking for somebody else. I'm looking for somebody else who, somebody here, somebody totally new with a new comment. Or is it going to be everybody's a repeat comment here. All right, let me see if I can go back and try to find one of these. Oh, here we go. Tom Thigh says, Patty is the GOAT. Patricia Traina, who's in charge of the New York Giants on SI site. I've known Patty for probably more than 25 years. She's terrific. She's an old school reporter. She understands responsibility. She understands journalism. She understands, you know, how to use proper judgment. She does a very nice job. No question about that. And so, nice comment to throw Patty's way. That's awfully kind of you. Let me see here. Is there anything else? I can go back now and maybe go for a repeat. Oh, here we go. Okay, Big Blue. Says, Paul, who are most focused on watching tomorrow night on the O and D and special teams? Well, Big Blue, look, there's nobody in Big Blue Nation that is not going to have their eyes on the offensive line. Here's the problem. We don't know who's playing. Look, Carmen Brasillo, the offensive line coach, had said to us that if he has his druthers, he would not want to rotate linemen. He does want to rotate them in practice so that they all get work, so that in an emergency situation, you can plug a guy in and won't be unfamiliar with the spot that he may be asked to play. I totally concur with that 100%. He also says he'd like to have his five starting linemen late in training camp. Now, does that mean before the third and final preseason game against the Jets? Or does it mean after that game? I don't know. I'll be frank with you. I don't know. I'm looking at the calendar, and it is August 7th. So we are 1 month and 1 day away from the Minnesota Vikings regular season opener. When he said late in training camp, he didn't pin down a date. He didn't pin down a week. So I don't know how far he wants to go with this. Here's what I will say about the Giants offensive line. It was the opinion of everybody going in that left to right, it was going to be Thomas, okay, followed by JMS at center and Evan Neal at right tackle. And then the two free agent signees, John Runyon at right guard and Jermaine Illuminor at left guard. That's what we all penciled in the springtime after free agency had concluded. And by the way, I'm going to go a little more than an hour here, folks, because you still have some more questions. I love talking Giants football, so I'll take this a little further. So anyway, that's what we thought. Now, what, of course, has happened? Evan Neal's foot has not healed properly. So Evan Neal, right now, is out of the picture. So Jermaine Illuminor had to go to right tackle. Okay, so now reconfigure Thomas at one tackle, Illuminor at the other tackle. JMS has a sore shoulder. He's missed a week. All right, now what do we do? Oh, wait a minute. Giants sign Greg Van Roten. Greg Van Roten, I'm going to say the term, and I don't mean this in a derogatory fashion, but a journeyman offensive lineman. He's been around for the better part of a decade. Last year with the Raiders, under Carmen Brasillo, he had his best season yet. He is a Long Island guy. Thrilled to come back home. He had a little bit of short stint with the Jets, you'll recall. Thrilled to come back home. He sees this as home, even though it's in New Jersey. Thrilled to be here. Thrilled to be working with Coach Brasillo, who had him in Illuminor in Las Vegas with the Raiders, where Van Roten was the right guard and Illuminor was the right tackle. So he comes in, and immediately people start speculating, maybe Van Roten is going to be the right guard, Illuminor can be the right tackle, and maybe Runyon's got to go back to left guard, which he was more comfortable with when he played there with the Packers, even though he had played both spots. So that's kind of how the soap opera was developing. But because John Michael Schmitz has a sore shoulder and hasn't been practicing, and the Giants are trying to figure out who their best option is as a second-string center, well, it doesn't appear like they were overly thrilled with Schlotman, who was the free agent they signed from the Minnesota Vikings, or third stringer Jimmy Morrissey. Now, why do I say that? Well, I say that because one day after Greg Van Roten got here, they started working him at center. Now, he's done some of that before, so it's not out of the realm of possibility or out of the question. But for a guy who just got here, and right away, one day after he signs, they start giving him work at center. And he's gotten more and more work at center over the last few practices. And he's looked good. Well, what does that do to the next page in the chapter? Well, Van Roten's getting more work now at center than he is at guard. Does that mean that he becomes the number two center? And in the meantime, they float him back to guard, even though he hasn't been getting much work there? See, the other guy in this mix is Aaron Stinney. Now, he's the veteran who was signed from the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, started in the Super Bowl a couple years back, played about almost a dozen games as a starter last year, and they brought him in during the offseason. Now, he's a guard, and only a guard. So, it's musical chairs at the moment. We got to see who plays against the Lions tomorrow. Are they going to go with the starting tackles and let Thomas and Illuminor start at the tackles and open the game that way? We just don't know. Azudu has been working as a backup tackle. Miles has been working as a backup tackle. Might they be the two starting tackles in this game? Potentially. Van Roten's only been here for a few days. Is it fair to throw him into a preseason game? They obviously like him, and they wanted him, so they brought him in, and they like his versatility. But is it fair to throw him into a game when he's only been here a few days? I don't know the answer to that. He is experienced. He probably could handle some snaps. So if they do they put him at guard or they put him at center? These are hard questions right now, folks, because it seems to me there's a very good chance that whatever you do with the starting five offensive linemen against Detroit tomorrow night, that's not going to be the starting five that plays against the Minnesota Vikings. It's not. I mean, they fully intend on Thomas being the left tackle, and he may not play tomorrow. They intend on JMS being the starting center against Minnesota. He's certainly not going to play tomorrow. Illuminor might wind up being the starting right tackle against Minnesota. But if he's going to be, and, you know, they're kind of leery right now as to who the third tackle might be. They've been working Azudo out there. But they may not want to play Illuminor out there tomorrow. So tomorrow's configuration on the offensive line, yes, do we all want to see if the Giants' offensive line is truly better than it was last year? God knows it has to be, right? It couldn't get any worse unless they put me out there. That would be worse. Trust me. Even if I gained another 150 pounds, it would not help. So here's the thing. We truly don't know which five starting offensive linemen they're going to play against Detroit, but we do know that it's 99.9% sure that won't be the starting five that play against the Minnesota Vikings in regular season game one. And if that's the case, then I ask all of you out there, how much are we really going to learn about the Giants offensive line when these guys will not be the band that's playing the instruments in a month? We may learn that some of these guys are functional backups and that they deserve to be amongst the nine offensive linemen that the Giants retain. That may be true. I'm all for that. But will it really tell us if this offensive line is getting a whole lot better? We probably aren't going to learn that tomorrow. Just by default, we're not going to learn that. And that's a shame. That's a real shame. So I'm going to be looking very much at the running backs because I suspect that Singletary, if he does play, will be out quickly. And the battle at the number two, number three, and number four running back is going to be really hot and heavy. So I'll be looking at the running backs, and I expect to learn something about the running backs tomorrow. Okay? I absolutely do. Defensively, again, not knowing exactly who's going to play and how much, we're going to be looking at the secondary for sure. You know, even if they don't play the starters, we're still going to be looking at the secondary because you want depth back there. You know, I'll be looking at Johnson at linebacker. I'll be looking at Beavers at linebacker. We'll be looking at the three technique defensive tackle and see how does that sort itself out. I don't think you'll see Nacho, and if you do, he'll be out quick, which means Ryder Anderson and Phillips and Riley and DJ Davidson. All these guys are going to get snaps. So I would say look closely at the three technique defensive tackle spot. Look at Johnson and Beavers at the linebacker spot. And then look at any of the backups that are going to be playing in the secondary. I would say look at any of those guys. That's what I'd be looking for on defense in this game. Special teams. Look, guys, we haven't seen this kickoff return yet. Very little of it during training camp. Little of it. So, you know, Gano is going to kick, you know, in the regular season. We know that for sure. Gillen's going to be the punter during the regular season. We know that for sure. So let's just see who they put back there on punt and kickoff return. Let's see who it is. Let's see who it is. And how well they do. All right, let me go back. Let me go back to the comments and see if there's any more here now. Because I kind of gave you a whole bunch of long explanations on a bunch of topics. And while I said I didn't want to necessarily go back to repeat people, you guys did have some repeaters had some good questions that led me into other topics. So I did want to go there. All right, so let me go back here and start clicking through your comments. And let's see here. Let's see. All these we already got to. We already got to this. We're going through all the comments. Hey, Watson Graves likes my idea. All Giants All the Time YouTube channel. Oh, Watson, here's the only problem with that. if you've read Giants Twitter like you have over the course of the last decade, you've undoubtedly seen a lot of toxic stuff out there. And I guess as much as I would love to talk Giants 24/7, I don't think our eyes and ears could deal with all of the poisonous gases that have been circulating out there on the web, given the frustrations that have built up over the last decade or so of this team. So, selfishly, Watson, I'd like to see it, but realistically, I think that's asking for too much trouble and a lot of problems, and it would require a tremendously giant, huge bottle of headache formula. I know, we don't want to mention any brand names, but ibuprofen, I guess, right? Okay? Somebody told me the other day that a generic name for a headache pain reliever actually is not, that it's actually copyrighted by a company. So they're like, no, you don't want to use that. So we'll forget about that. All right, let's see. Jordan's got a real question here because he was asking me about my favorite FDU SID. Well, Jordan already knows the answer to that, but let's face it now, okay? If you know anything about FDU, not only do you know about that basketball team that did what they did with the huge second ever 16-seeded upset a couple of years back, which was just phenomenal and lit this entire area on fire. You also know that they got a guy, Salif Mene, who is absolutely kicking butt over at the Olympics right now. A guy from New York, lived through some really horrible tragedies. He's lost his father to COVID, and been at FDU, seven-time All-American. I don't want to get off track here, but he's in the men's triple jump. Today, he tied for third amongst the qualifiers in the men's triple jump. And on Friday afternoon, this FDU guy is going to try to grab an Olympic medal. And it's a great story. So I thank Jordan for at least bringing up FDU as part of his comments, because Salif is, from what I understand, a wonderful young man. And it's a great New York metropolitan area story. And if he brings home some hardware for the United States, that would be so, so cool. And Jordan knows Salif extremely well, of course, being at the school. And that's how I kind of heard about him. And it would be very cool. All right, I got off track for just a minute. I apologize, folks. But I'm going to go to 9:30 here because I got more questions. And again, I just love talking Giants football. Jordan did ask, though, what NFL teams look to get out of the first preseason game? Well, A, they're looking to stay healthy, right? That's number one. Number one is, don't get hurt, please. That's number one. Number two, operations. Brian Daboll admitted he's going to call plays in the first preseason game. He still hasn't told us if he's decided to do it for the season, but it's a very logical assumption since he's called plays throughout the spring and throughout the summer, and he's going to call plays tomorrow night against Detroit. It's a logical assumption that he'll keep them for the season. He himself said tomorrow is a very big dry run through how that process works for him, how he's going to call the plays, how he's going to communicate with his assistants, how he's going to communicate with his own players. Offensive coordinator Mike Kafka, according to Daboll, is expected to be upstairs in the booth, which is where he was the first 2 years of his time with the Giants. So that's point number two. Number one, no injuries. Point number two, how do the mechanics work of Brian Daboll now as a head coach calling the plays? Remember, he's had about 10 years of NCAA and NFL experience as a offensive coordinator combined, but not as a head coach calling the plays. So this is something new. So that's another huge point that he's going to be looking to learn about tomorrow. What else do they want to learn about? Well, the guys who are deep on the depth chart, again, because the training camps are so watered down these days, when you get an opportunity to actually go out there and compete against the unknown, against a real opponent. The guys who are fighting for second, third, maybe even fourth string on the depth chart, these guys need to show something. That's how they can get the coach's attention. So that would be the third thing that's really important in the first preseason game. But, you know, to be honest, all three of those things are kind of important for all the preseason games. But the first impression is the preseason opener. And you know what everybody says about the first impression, right? You don't get a chance to do a first impression a second time. So thank you very much, Jordan, for the question. Let's see here. Mark Thompson, what does Kafka do as assistant head coach that he would not do as an offensive coordinator? Is it just window dressing? No, actually, we've talked to him about this. He is more involved in all of the other meetings that Brian Daboll does with the general manager, with the rest of the staff. There's much more of a collaboration going on now that that Mike Kafka has been named, you know, assistant head coach slash offensive coordinator. He's still a big part of formulating the playbook on Monday. Still a very, very big part of that. Forming the base of the playbook. But then there's an awful lot of collaboration. And it's interesting, when Daboll hires his staff or any of his other assistants, you know, individuals, not just the whole staff when he got here, but all of this, he gets his other assistant coaches involved in the interview process. I'll be frank with you. I'd never heard that before from any other head coach that I have worked around. But Daboll is very collaborative on getting his staff together and then collaborative on having them do the work during the course of the season. I hope that answers your question, Mark. All right, let's see here. Big Blue wants to know how that Duke football behind me doesn't move. That's because I nailed it down. Okay, Big Blue. All right. Cecil McCathern. What do you got for me, Cecil? Let's see here. Even without work, is he better than Stinney at guard? I guess he's asking me about Van Roten. Well, Stinney's actually performed pretty well during training camp, to be frank with you. So it's all about the configuration. Who are the best five as a unit together? That's what they're going to go into Minnesota with. Is it possible that Stinney is one of those starters? Yes, it is. Is it possible that Van Roten is one of those starters? Yes, it is. I can't give you a better answer right now because that's the only answer we got. Let the competition play out. Thank you, Cecil. Appreciate the call or the message. Also, with a second one, if Illuminor and Thomas don't start, no way DJ plays. I'm inclined to agree with you, myself. Look, my initial feeling was that Daniel Jones would not play. I originally said that over a month ago. He would not play in the preseason. That was my guess. And that the Giants would give him enough work at practice in the 11-on-11s, and Daboll has emphasized 11-on-11s and not used many 7-on-7s at all because he wants to give Jones a better feel for what game action would be like. And that just enhanced my belief that Jones would not play any preseason games. Then, as he was taking all the first-team reps and all the 11-on-11s and was looking so good and he looked so mobile, and I understand that physically and all the testing that they've done, he is fully back. And to be frank, even more athletic than he was before the knee injury. I'm thinking to myself, okay, maybe he does get a few preseason snaps. But to your point, Cecil, if Thomas and Illuminor are not playing tomorrow, I can't see any way Daniel Jones plays. In fact, to be frank, you know, when we were discussing this a week ago, you know, we didn't know how jumbled that line might be against the Lions on Thursday night. And so the thought was maybe he gets in for a series or two. As I sit here right now, the night before the game, I would say Jones doesn't play. And Thomas and Illuminor don't play either. That's my gut feel right now, Cecil. But don't hold me to that because, again, Dable has not given us any tips whatsoever. He said he was going to discuss it with the staff tonight, and they'll come up with an answer, which means nobody else has the answer until they sleep on it tonight and they go to bed knowing what they're going to do. And so nobody has that answer right now. But thank you. Told you last week the line for week is Thomas Ryan. Well, all right. Well, again, Cecil, great. Maybe. I don't want to make any assumptions right now. Training camp is all about competition. Okay? He's saying Thomas, Runyon, JMS, Van Roten, and Illuminor. Could that be? Absolutely it could be. That's possible. But with a month to go? No. I'm not putting anything in magic marker. Absolutely not. You want to pencil that in? Do it. I'm not using a magic marker. Can't do it. All right. Continuing to get some more here. Four Super Bowl rings. Is Dable really going to use neighbors for punt returning? I don't think so. No. I look, I don't want to speak for him, but I don't think so. I would be very surprised. All right, let's see. Roger Noraki? Noraki, I think that's what it is. All right, well, let's see here. Aside from punt returner Gunnar Olszewski, who's got the edge for wide receiver 5, and if they keep 6? McKenzie, Allen Robinson, Isaiah Hodgins, Dennis Houston, or Miles Boykin? All right. I agree with you, first of all. We know who the top 4 receivers are. Okay? It's going to be Slayton. It's going to be Hyatt. It's going to be Neighbors. It's going to be Wandell Robinson. Okay. I can't, if I'm the coach, I can't cut Gunnar Olszewski. Olszewski, to me, has to be on this team. He was outstanding on punt returns last year. He also has been working a lot at receiver during training camp, and he catches everything. He is a gamer and a baller. I could not, if I had to make the cut, I could not cut Gunnar Olszewski. So that's 5. Okay, you got to, I mean, I know he plays special teams, but he's from the wide receiver room. That's 5. You got to keep 6. I'm pretty sure they're keeping 6. I don't think they'll keep 7. So I think they'll keep 6. Now, of those 5 guys that you mentioned, the gentleman who has performed the most consistently over the first few weeks of training camp is Dennis Houston. Talked about this on Big Blue Kickoff Live today, as a matter of fact. He has probably been the most consistent of all of the contenders who could win that 6th spot. But I think it is highly likely that you could get him through waivers and you could get him onto the practice squad, like where he was last year. I don't think you have to protect him. I think you could get him through. Interesting you didn't mention Ford Wheaton or Giles or Ayer Asante in your list of wide receivers, because all of these guys, at one time or another during training camp, have flashed. Every single one of them, folks. Every single one of them have flashed during training camp. That's what I'm trying to tell people. This is a painful wide receiver room to cut. We're going to have to watch the next month very, very carefully. Hodgins was just so quiet last year. I don't know what it would take for him to make the team this camp. I know what he did in 22, but he was awfully quiet last year and never really busted out. And that was very disappointing. Boykin is a special teams demon. They picked him up as a free agent from Pittsburgh off of the Steelers roster. Special teams demon. I don't know that he does enough, though, in the passing game that I would consider him on the 53. He probably could pass through and get to the practice squad, too, if they wanted to do it. So that leaves Isaiah McKenzie and Allen Robinson. Boy, that's tough. Dable loves Isaiah McKenzie. If you listen to him talk about him, former Buffalo Bill, can't say enough of great stuff about him. Smart, tough, dependable, versatile, pros pro. Can't say enough about him. Well, we know from people around the NFL, same words could be used about Allen Robinson. Only thing is, Allen Robinson doesn't play special teams. Does that become a factor? And it usually does. On the back end of the receiver depth chart, special teams usually becomes a key factor. Problem is here is that Robinson is a much different receiver from McKenzie. Robinson, tall, long, okay, he has good length. And how else is he different than McKenzie? Well, he's a much more physical receiver who can play the big slot and also block for the running game. That's not McKenzie's game. What does McKenzie have over Allen Robinson? And by the way, Allen Robinson has glue for hands. McKenzie's edge over Robinson is that he's a kick returner. And Robinson is not. Allen Robinson, again, let me make that clear. And he's got the Buffalo Bills connection. And you can probably run more of a variety of plays with McKenzie than you can with Allen Robinson. Jet sweeps and things of that nature. Because he used to run them all the time with the Bills. So that's like comparing an apple to an orange. Okay? Both guys do overlap with some very important qualities. They're reliable. They're pros. They're leaders. They're well-liked. They're respected. They've been productive in the NFL. They overlap in a lot of ways, but they do have some differences. And right now, I would not want to be the one who's got to figure out which one stays and which one goes, because it depends on your personal preference for those differences and also what you think is missing in the wide receiver room. Do you think you need another return guy? Then maybe McKenzie's the guy. Do you think you need another long, tall guy? Then maybe Robinson's the guy. Those guys are going to fight it out. That's good. That's too early to call, Roger. Too early to call. But you can be sure I'm watching that whole group of receivers, all of them. I've been watching them closely ever since camp started. I'm going to keep watching them closely. Thanks for the question. Mark Thompson, I have two hot takes. Allen Robinson makes the 53 and Hodgins doesn't. Okay, let me say, I could understand that. I think that's possible. Hodgins does not have nearly the accomplished resume that Allen Robinson has. If you look at the two resumes, you know, trying to balance it out on a scale, Robinson's is much, much heavier. Is he older? Sure he is. But on the whole, it's a heavier resume. That's just a fact. And I just discussed this, Mark, in terms of what I thought about that depth chart. So I don't think that that's a long shot. Gray doesn't make the 53 unless they carry only six wide receivers. Again, it's going to be awfully hard to cut a mid-round draft pick who I liked very much when they took him. I thought it was an excellent draft choice. And last year, he basically only got a chance to do returns. And that didn't work out very well. And Joe Shane, the general manager, admitted that. So I find it hard to believe that they would cut him, especially if you believe that if you only go with three running backs, if you believe that Dante Miller could be snuck onto the practice squad. I don't think your statement is impossible, but I don't know if it's very likely. I think they carry seven receivers because of the heavy passing and the special teams. See, here's the thing. You're not going to dress seven receivers. You're not. So you say keep seven on the 53, but you're not dressing seven on game day. So if you think you can get a couple of those receivers onto the practice squad, that's what you do. And this way, you have your practice squad elevations. Remember, each guy gets three practice squad elevations. So you have the practice squad elevations if you need them. And then if somebody seriously gets hurt, you got your insurance receivers sitting there on the practice squad. You could always bring them up and actually sign them if you had to. So I don't think they keep seven receivers. I think there's an outside chance. I don't think so. It is a possibility, but I don't think so. I think it's going to be six receivers, and I think they're going to get as many of these other back of the depth chart receivers onto the practice squad as they possibly can. That's what I think. And that's going to be tough when some of these guys may potentially get scapped up in the final cut. All right. I think that will do it for tonight's edition of the Big Blue Breakdown on the New York Giants on SI Media Network. This has been a fun hour and a half. Folks, I only expected to do an hour tonight, but you guys kept me busy. So I thank all of you for not only tuning in, but for chiming in into the chat with a bunch of questions and a bunch of observations. It's been an awful lot of fun. Enjoy the game tomorrow as the Giants and Lions go at it at MetLife Stadium. Again, the forecast is for rain all day. Oh, boy. That's going to be fun, huh? Rain all day, rain all night. It is going to be what it is. And if you go to the game, hopefully you stay dry, you don't get sick. I'll be on the sidelines, soaking wet like a sponge. It is what it is. And we will be back. The plan for me is to be back here next Wednesday night. Hopefully, you'll continue to watch my Twitter at GiantsWFAN, and we will confirm that show and that time. But as it stands now, we've been doing Wednesday nights at 8 o'clock. And if you guys want to keep coming along for the ride, we are going to be so glad to have you. Well, again, that'll do it for this edition of the Big Blue Breakdown. I'm Paul Dottino, and we will see you again next time.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices. Plus, extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. And up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.